Hey, hey, if you're hearing that music, you know it's a fifth Monday here in the U.S. of A., and we're listening to Spiritual Perspectives this morning. Spiritual Perspectives originating from our flagship station, KEST, in San Francisco, and simulcast around the world on www.ifidknownthen.com. I'm Scout Bartlett, and I'll be your host. And this morning, we have a very special opportunity, at least for me. I love this. This is such a treat. It's like everything I can do to sort of keep myself together. This morning, I get to talk with, and you get to listen and join with, Fujiko Sainz. Fujiko, one of her comments is, coming from a non-Christian country originally, she was originally born in Japan, my passion is to communicate the universality of Christian Science. If you are a deep thinker and a compassionate person, you are bound to seek ways to relieve those who suffer from limited views of themselves, from pain or oppression. She's even worked with doctors and nurses to help them understand patients who were seeking non-traditional care, so she's on our side. But to make a life study of seeking ways to help those who suffer from limited views of themselves. Fujiko is going to be in Australia doing a series of 14 lectures in zero time. So doing a rock star tour of Australia, we'll mention that again. But right now, everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Fujiko Sainz. Fujiko, this is everybody.
Hi, everyone, and hi, Scott.
It's such a treat to have you back again. Thank you.
So thank you.
Right now, you're actually, let's see, you were in Japan. Right now, you're in Washington, right?
Yes, state of Washington and on Bainbridge Island.
Ah, beautiful. And then you're running away from Washington and heading out to go to Australia with, I think, 13 lectures. I think I said 14. So that'll be exciting.
I have a little touchdown in Tokyo.
Sort of the rock star tour of the world, Fujiko.
Oh, no.
So you and I, we both like to explore concepts. And one of the topics that you're going to be working with is something that I've been actually meditating on and working with for a number of years. It's a set of phrases that I think people get used to just repeating by rote without actually paying much attention to the words. But you've actually been doing a real study and an insight into what gets referred to as the Lord's Prayer. So how is it that you're thinking about this differently rather than just mumble, 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 mumble? What have you discovered as you've explored the Lord's Prayer?
Well, first of all, it's a very short, perhaps 7 lines and one benediction added to it. A man who's coming from a Jewish tradition, it's a very short prayer, and then he only left one for us to really think about it and contemplate and have more of a spiritual sense of his teaching. And I just found that the Lord's Prayer to be the most exemplary in a short messages from Jesus to really see how God is universal and everyone needs to really see that one family here to work together to bring heaven on earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's my passion.
Perfect. Because I've got some notes. I snuck around and read up on you. There's a whole place where you study deeply the relationship between prayer and healing, between conscious reality, spirituality, and well-being. So before we dive further into that prayer, one of the questions I ask in every spiritual perspectives program is I like to take a look at, for you yourself, what does that word pray or prayer mean as you experience it or as you discover it?
Well, in a nutshell, there's two parts to it. One is to have an insight or inspiration that's just catered to you, and that inspiration or insight to free you. That's mm-hmm. prayer to me.
So would you just say that again?
Well, the first step is to have an insight or inspiration catered just for you, the message just for you, and that message is to liberate you, to free you.
Yes. I love that. So here's one that I'll just toss because it's fun. I just get to chat with you for a minute with a couple of people listening in. So I've been meditating and looking into the exact same prayer. And one of the things I've been playing with is that the translation that I'm familiar with says, "Our Father who art in heaven."
Right.
And I found that it changes the whole prayer if I look at that as a small translation glitch. And if I read it as, "Our Father who art heaven."
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Because I also read the English translation of the Aramaic, the Lord's Prayer.
Ooh.
Which probably is the language that Jesus used. Not probably, but certainly. Because nobody was walking around speaking Hebrew, you know, at that point.
Much less English.
Right. And so when you do the study of that language and understand that heaven really is not a place that you go after death, but it's an entire universe and cosmos. And I can show you two translations. One says, "Father, Mother," well, actually it starts with, "O Birther," the Father, Mother of the cosmos, is one of the translations. And another one is, "Father, Mother of all above and below," or something like that. It just encompasses the whole universe. So when we think that this source, whatever you call it, the God or Father, is really itself, the universe, and knowing of itself only.
Ooh, now it's getting way more fun.
Is it?
I like this. Because if we look at a physical example, just to mess with this for a second, mm-hmm. when I look at my chromosomes, my DNA, my mm-hmm. DNA is half from my father and mm-hmm. half from my mother. So mm-hmm. if I thought of Father, Mother of all, or even if I thought of Father as God and Mother Earth, I could think of myself as one part of me is that Father God part, and the other part of me is that Mother Earth part, and I'm the combination of the two.
Well, that's right. That's really the way, from our perspective, it looks like there's a duality.
Yes.
There's spiritual and material. But from if we do more and more of the study of what Jesus speaks and shares, his view of the reality of this Father, there's actually only one view. And I call it singularity instead of duality. And I know in physics there is actually terminology in singularity, and I'm not going into this because I don't understand high physics. But it does have a great deal to do with reality. Like the Hindus, they have a bindu in the middle of the forehead, mm-hmm. and they said to see it with a third eye, which is one. And, interestingly enough, Jesus says the light of your body is in the eye, and therefore when your eye be single, your body shall be full of light. And so it really is up to us. We have this wonderful faculty called thinking, and if we choose that single view, our focus, our experience will adjust to this. But if we're continuously thinking, which one is it? Is it this me or that me? We have two eyeballs and trying to focus to get one picture, and it's usually not very accurate.
Yeah, yeah, with that wonderful faculty called thinking.
Yes, that's right. The thinking part, actually, that's the metaphysical part of this study, that we go beyond what we can see, feel, touch, transcending the physical law, we might call spiritual, but that's what we have, the ability to think beyond the frame that other people would put as the final picture. And every advancement comes from this ability to see beyond physical law. And I sometimes in another lecture share this concept of zero, which was introduced worldly at the World Fair in 1892, or someone can look it up, in Chicago. This Indian mathematician had to stand in front of the blackboard for hours trying to explain what zero was.
Wow.
And that's a metaphysical idea that, you know, had to be there already. And we say discover, but it's just a matter of uncovering it. Taking the cover is discover. And that man who said, I discovered this, and trying to explain to people, at that time felt like, why don't you get this? But these days, we don't even question.
Mm-hmm.
And that man who was in front of the blackboard never even conceived that this number zero would bring to my hand this little iPhone 5. You know, it's impossible to have that computer without zero and one.
It's true.
So every idea that goes beyond even the one who discovered it is a metaphysical universal truth. And it's benefiting all of us. And I think the truth that Jesus speaks of, the truth that shall make you free, is what we're after.
Mm-hmm. I love the phrase that in one of your lectures you mentioned that you seek the ideas that will empower everyone with the understanding of the direct access they have to divine mind, or God, the source of intelligence, and that that access is available to everyone at every moment.
Right.
So are we separate from it, or do we just separate?
Well, I think we think too much of ourselves, that we are actually doing things. But if we understand that, as you said, we are already in that one mind, the universe, and you let it unfold, you see what we may not see now to come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's innovation. That's, invention. That's an idea that really advanced our humanity. So, you know, to me, I did a recent study on this prayer. I looked up the word temptation. And temptation has three elements to it. One is handle, another one is try, and another one is test. So we think we're handling things, or testing ability, or trying. Or if we think we're handled by someone or something, or tested or tried, that's all temptation.
Uh-huh. So all of those parts that distract us, take us off track, or seem to be in charge of us, mm-hmm. are the aspect of lead us not into being lost.
Right, to think that you're all that.
And a bag of chips.
That's right. Well, I mean, every single one of us feel like, I have to somehow react. I have to respond. I have to, you know, correct. And I think that even if it seems like a just cause, we have to really watch, because we're stepping into a place and not allowing that even higher power to give us even better ways to solve problems.
That is that interesting place when my mind wants to jump up and say, please give me this thing, rather than allowing myself to move more deeply inside into, please support me to move into, I'll say it, this energetic or this emotional space, and then see what the things are that surround that.
Is that what I said?
I don't know. It just sounded like the same thought.
Oh, that's right. That's good. You're alliterating it.
That's my job. I'm supposed to pay attention. But I love this write-up. Fujiko Sines, a student practitioner, teacher of Christian Science, she studies the relationship between healing and prayer, consciousness and reality. Her job is to find out how we can be freed from the various limitations through prayer. My job's to listen and see what I can find out.
Good job.
So the relationship between consciousness and reality, the relationship between healing and prayer, two different dances. So I know there's that wonderful phrase in America of do they or don't they walk their talk, as it were, which I find interesting because I think both you and I would recognize that it's not a walk our talk, it's more a talk our walk. Because we're already walking it before we're trying to talk about it. And I have a sense that you've done a tremendous study of that relationship between healing and prayer, and not just on a separate read it from a book and think about it level, but really practical. I mean, sort of, it's like the difference between a theoretical scientist and an engineer. The theoretical scientist thinks about it, the engineer figures out how to make it work. And it looks to me like you've been sort of studying the engineering side of prayer and healing.
Okay. Well, it comes by the privilege to be able to have other people call and come to our lives, to try to untangle that knot together. And every time we see this, we have a little bit more confidence and say, hey, that diagnosis was not a final say, or that characteristic was not that final say of this person. And it's only by applying, as much as, you know, we do anything, whether it's cooking or teaching, unless you stand in front and do it with others, we don't really know what we don't know. So I don't know a lot. It's just that I'm very fortunate enough to have people trust God enough to trust me to call and say, you know, I'm struggling. And sometimes I am sitting with those people just listening to the messages. But when something that seems like Goliath, that giant, overwhelming us, and see that one little smooth stone clearing that whole dream, the nightmare, it just feels like, okay, it might not always be easy, but that's the path that I want to take, and I want more people to see this to give them more freedom.
Mm-hmm. So you were not raised in a Christian Science belief system, but I know that the things that you teach now, one of the key elements you use is the book Science and Health with Keys to the Scripture by Mary Baker Eddy. Mm-hmm. You came to the concepts of Christian Science a little later and, let's say, a little more urgently than if you'd been raised in that sort of thing. So you were born in Japan, spent some early years in India. Mm. How did it come about that you ended up finding Mary Baker Eddy's teachings?
Well, you know, I think a child has to be very curious. And I probably had parents that let me be curious. And sometimes skeptic about what we see or what we hear. And in Japan, those children are not usually the obedient, sweet children. You have to listen and just obey. But I was not always like that. And maybe that has to do a lot with my upbringing in India, going to German kindergarten.
Oh, my.
You know, two and a half through almost six, I was exposed to this kind of a critical thinking, and you know, think what you mean instead of in Japanese way, which is like, don't say what you think, but have other people guess what you're thinking. So I think that is one, and the parents are really open, let me be who I was. But going through Christian school, I always questioned whether the doctrine or creed that they had really reflected the view of God that I had. Mm-hmm. So even if at third or fourth grade, my first aspiration was to become a nun and go to Africa and teach children, which was quickly turned down by my mother. that desire was, I would say, always there. And in high school, when I had a failing health, I would say more mentally, because I just had a very, eating disorder. I didn't even want to go to school most of my senior year. Mm-hmm. I studied something which you call Reiki, the study of the life force power. Mm-hmm. And I already witnessed there healings that people had without, you know, popping pills in or having surgery. I've seen people have broken, legs being healed. But so that was kind of a combination of wanting to become a nun and experiencing healing without so-called allopathy. And finally, in my 30s, coming to this study called Christian Science, where this healing without actually manipulating things is possible because we, again, go to this most sacred and precious place called thinking, consciousness, which is not mind to me. It's more your heart, your feeling, what you sense, spiritual, what you sense. So I think it's a lot of combination of things, but when I found in America that none of the alternative things that I knew was really working for me, this book, the ideas read by this book, just healed me. I didn't even have my own copy of this book. I just sat through the services and listened while my children were going to Sunday school, which was really the main reason I was there.
Or at least you thought so.
That's right. My daughter thought she needed a Sunday school, but I needed something more.
Yeah, and it just ever so subtly changed your future.
Oh, yes. Yes. Very much so. But then it was more of coming home with clear blueprint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so step by step, step by step, I gained some confidence, sometimes, feeling defeated. But again, experience when I reach to our Father, this our Father, which is love, always guides me back and say, I'm here. I'm doing it.
So just to really get wild for a moment, you just said our Father or God or Divine Mind is always love and always within reach. How would you view practices that speak about a punitive or an angry God that either likes you or doesn't?
Hmm. Well, it's actually a reflection of our limited sense of who we are that projects that God.
Uh-huh.
We see what we believe. And if we are seeing that you are, your existence is not worthy, and somehow you deserve or you need to be punished, that you're asking for authority to do this, which is really man-made concept of God. If God is love, and if it isn't love, and when you see the nature and animals and the places that you really feel you're being touched by the divine, you can't help to think that it must be some power called love that's beyond human love, that it's for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Impartial.
So there's a place where I noticed sometimes people accidentally fall into a belief that they believe in a biblical presence, or they believe in many, many of the early spiritual teachers. And we notice that the teacher Jesus shows up in a broad number of religions. Not everybody that only studies mm-hmm. one religion realizes that mm-hmm. the dude had quite a reputation. Mm-hmm. But it's almost as if sometimes people believe those books, but then it's kind of like, well, then that was the age of miracles, and then somehow the clock wound down. And so I love the phrase that you've got in something I was reading that said, one day, to Fujiko's surprise, she found that the healing of Christ Jesus was possible now and learnable. Mm. How would you get that across to folks so they could think in terms of not that there was an age of miracles 2,000 years ago and now we're just sort of, stumbling along, but that that's really still a reality?
Well, we have to really accept that even if it's a very small healing, what you might even call finding a lost item in your life, if you are including that divine mind that can see everything, then you have to say, okay, this must be a sign. And I think we are kind of a sign collectors. And my last name is conveniently Signs.
Yes.
So, you know, we can only start to be convinced or feel this if we see some evidences. But we have to be first willing to accept that there might be a possibility beyond my background in intelligence, education, ability with the technology, electricity and all these things, that higher power is actually in charge. And, you know, because Jesus himself said, if you believe in me, the works that I do, you shall do also. And why would he say that if, you know, it was just for him and his time? And I think we probably throughout the history that when the churches are made with a sense of hierarchy and salvation needing to come through an institution, we kind of drop the fact that I don't, you know, I need to do anything for my own self, including healing ourselves and others.
Well, I think that's really true, where a portion of that institution created a separation.
Mm-hmm.
So when you, we'll just go totally wild. In fact, when you think of God, Fujiko, what are you thinking of? I know I grew up in a Protestant Christian belief system, and in my childhood I saw God as some really old dude with a long white beard sitting in a big chair, and certain people sat in his right hand and other people and so forth. But that's not exactly how I look at it now. But when you think of God, what's your image? What's your picture? What's your sense or your feel of that?
Well, right now, I feel when I think of God, it's more feeling, the feeling of embrace, that I won't let you go.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we are always being in love at one time or another. We love to be held by someone we love, right?
Yes.
And the longer, the better.
Yes.
And I just feel like God is holding us, each one of us, and won't let go.
Well, yes.
But it's a feeling, so I don't know how to explain. But when I feel this about someone, I can be more patient. I can see through the problem and include that person in that embrace. And many times I experience, or they report back that there's a healing.
And so, literally, what sorts of things have you seen respond as a healing? And I love the, there's a Course in Miracles, and they say there's no hierarchy in miracles. A small miracle is just as big as a big miracle. They're all miracles. And I love your reference of, even if it's a lost object that resurfaces because of a change in thinking and a change in mind. But if we step beyond that into larger changes of thinking and mind, what sort of things have you seen respond and heal? You mentioned that in your 30s, you yourself were having a physical challenge that when you found out that going and sitting in church while your daughter went to Sunday school, that just sitting in church, that was a shift and a change and a healing. But you mentioned also the privilege of getting to work with and talk with other people and watch as their ideas change and open, and as they gain a level of freedom that they weren't experiencing, and then things reflect that in their world in a healing.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes you feel like this person's working on this for decades, and it's kind of stuck with this person, so it's not going to be it's not going to change. Or sometimes the medical diagnosis or the research is so advanced in certain area, you feel like, oh, why don't you know, we just go ahead and take care of this physically? And so there's a lot of time, you know, there's a temptation to feel this way. But recently I had a person who had what you call bipolar, for decades. You know, she's unable to come out, and she's down, you know, from her home, not eating. You know, but when she's up, she'll do everything, and not even sleeping. But you know, the belief is that you're not going to be able to be healed.
Right.
And I've known her for some years, and recently there was a breakthrough. When there was something that I had said about metaphysical concept of men and how she clicked. There was something that clicked, and she knew she was healed. And so the first time, she's out actually shopping, cooking, helping her mom. And it's not just temporary thing, an extreme high and low, but she knew. She just knew inside her heart that she's completely healed.
So we're back to that feeling thing. I love that. Fujiko, I'm going to break away just a second to remind everybody that this is Spiritual Perspectives, broadcasting from our flagship station, KEST, 1450 AM in San Francisco, and simulcast on the internet, and will be archived at www.ifidknownthen.com. I'm Scout Bartlett, your host. And we always remind you that Spiritual Perspectives is simply looking at real life from a spiritual perspective. And we want to thank the church that sponsored our program this morning from Mill Valley. We appreciate that. We also want to welcome all of our friends that are dialing in from Australia, where it's not today anymore. It's just about, in fact, right about now, it's tomorrow in Australia. So I hope you guys are seeing our future and it's looking really well. I'll mention that if you'll Google, those of you down under, if you'll Google Christian Science Australia, in the right-hand column, there's a whole listing of the free talks, and you can then find where in your area Fujiko Signs will be. She'll be doing a series of 13 different talks in Australia. Newcastle, Ryde, Adelaide, Sydney, Wyndham, Gold Coast, Nambour, and I can't even pronounce Toowoomba. So that's exciting. That's going to be fun. You're going to sort of like go say hi in Japan and then bounce over to Australia and good day it for a while. And so I'm really lucky that we caught you while you were stateside and in the same time zone for a half a minute.
That's right. You know, you can't plan these things. It's just had to be, you know, just, I don't know, guided.
I look at this particular program, and there are such a sequence of coincidences, which is one of my little tells in the world. When I see it took six or seven coincidences to make something happen, I try to pay attention. And this one took at least that many for it to fall together. And then, all right, everybody, just so you'll know, I almost goofed it up at the last minute, and Fujiko saved it. So, that was mine, I'll admit that. So, talk to us a little bit more. You mentioned some part of the Lord's Prayer as viewed from, we'll call it original, or at least we expect, original Aramaic. Talk to us a little more about what you've found as you've taken apart this very, very well-known master prayer, which is, when you look at the Christian Bible anyway, as far as I know, and your research is deeper than mine, the only prayer that Jesus ever gave, and he gave it as a format as opposed to a specific set of words, because he doesn't say pray this, he says pray in this way.
Right. And because if you see Aramaic or even Hebrew words, one word can mean so many different things. It's very rich language. And the one thing, even before we pray, and I just had a little discovery, or I don't know, just an insight, when I was looking up the word closet, because he said to go into thine closet and shut the door. And, you know, interestingly enough, the concordances led me to see another word that's related to closet, which means now, present. So can you imagine, I think we need to constantly discipline ourselves to walk into now and not bringing in what happened even 30 seconds ago or thinking about my lunch later, but to be completely clear and to have everything up-to-date information.
Yeah, go into your now in order to connect and pray.
And that's the only way you'll be free. because all the time I talk to people and they really want healing, but they just can't let go of something from the past or the future.
Yes.
And that's the discipline. I think even Jesus, when we read in the Bible, went up in the mountain early in the morning to pray. Mm. I think that's the discipline that he's cultivating, and all of us need to have that. Ways to entering into now. And you know, it really, this actually makes sense, because he also said to be like a child. Children can live this very moment, and you see that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't live in the past or in the future.
Mm-hmm.
There are other elements of children that you can say the nature that we should really, think about, that we should have. Being very open and forgiving and all that stuff. But the way we observe children when they're making sandcastle on the beach, they're so into this. And when the wave comes and takes that castle away, they're back up again making that castle.
Yes, laughing all the way.
That's right. But they're enjoying the making part. They're not trying to say, let's preserve this castle for everyone or for me. And that's most of the thing that the adults do, is that let's build this for me or for my country or for whatever. So, you know, this living now actually liberates us from being possessive, and also not using outdated material in the closet or pantry.
Mm-hmm.
So anything fresh.
There's one phrase in the English translation I grew up with that has stumped me as I've worked with this particular prayer myself. And I've not seen the depth underneath, so I bet you've got something for me. Hallowed be thy name is the phrase that I know, and I'm okay with it, but what's the real depth of the communication there? It's the second line in the prayer as I know it.
Right. You know, when you said, here is a program today, and then you said my name. You know, when we point to something, someone, the next thing we want to know is the name. And this is a human activity that is very human. You know, I share in my lecture that sometimes scientists discover smallest or the largest or the furthest of something,
yes,
and they want to name it.
Yes.
And I always use this example of a frog, the smallest frog discovered so far. It was given a name. And I always say, does frog care whether he has a name?
Yeah, I'm sure once it got discovered and it got named, it totally changed the community.
Right. So the thing is that the name is really a burden. It restricts and it binds even a person. You know, you have a beautiful name given by your parents. But, which is very important, before you appear to your parents and given that name, you already existed as a child of this father and mother, God, and you only inherit this name, holy,
mm-hmm,
the holiness. And it really, again, liberates you. And also for us to see, Jesus is not choosing the name like Elohim or Jehovah, or whatever the name for the Jewish God. You're just saying, hallowed, holy is your name. And everyone can relate to this.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, that's my take for now. You know, it's that everyone has a spiritual sense. And I love Mary Baker Eddy's spiritual sense, adorable, one. Just two words. One, as you know, written with capital O, encompassing everything, one, not so much number one or you're the one. And adorable, adorare means in Latin, to worship, to talk to, or speak to. You know, that if someone, like a little baby, brought into your room, it's so adorable. Everyone naturally comes to that baby. And you know, we start talking to that baby.
Mm-hmm.
And just as you were saying that, everyone has access to this wonderful parent, the father, we can commune. It's natural for us to have this communication, or especially communication from the divine to us, because all the right ideas come to us constantly.
Perfect. So you mentioned earlier bringing that whole sense of heaven in earth or heaven on earth. And certainly the next phrase in that prayer says, thy kingdom come. And then there's a whole depth for me anyway, in terms of having things on earth respond in the same way that experiences beyond earth would respond or in heaven. So thy kingdom come, heaven and earth, connecting with that divine while here in physical presence. I can't even form that into a question. I'll just say go.
Well, you know, it's important to go to the original meaning of the word kingdom. What is it that the word, the English translation is kingdom, but what's the original word? You know, you can look it up. And kingdom really means royal power, authority, and rule.
Mm-hmm.
So when Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within you, there is a power, the authority, and the rule that's bestowed upon you, that you have an ability to see who you are. To me, thy kingdom come is not a future, it's present tense. It's here, the power is here. So heaven on, you know, earth and heaven, not a separate place. I used to think somehow earth elevating to heaven one day, or heaven coming down when earth is clean enough.
Yes.
But it's actually one, because there's, again, going back to that singularity. We don't live in a dual place, duality. That's the discipline of it, that we, again, through our consciousness thinking, that we accept that one reality, place.
Just an odd jump, because you were not in Christian Science, and you were out in the professional and technical world here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, you made a shift of gears to where now what you are is full-time practicing in studying and administering spiritual healing, for lack of a better way to phrase that. How'd you make that jump, Fujiko?
Well, you know, I just did whatever I needed to do, because I had a husband who was a graduate student.
Uh-huh.
And he was a graduate student for, say, 15, 16 years. So I call him gradual student. And, you know, it was my younger daughter who said, Dad, Mia, the older daughter, he has graduated from high school before you. And she said, you either quit or finish. And that, you know, finally it came to a point. But I did all the odd jobs from, you know, working as interpreter and translator for semiconductor industry, market research, teaching Japanese and Japanese literature, university level, or teaching dance. I bartered a lot of the after-school activities. So it wasn't like I chose to work for semiconductor industry, but it just happened to use my skill to translate.
I think we could find a lot of that here in Silicon Valley. Wasn't like I intended to do that; just sort of where I landed.
Yes, and you know, I've been to Anaheim and all these trade shows, and walking around with these engineers as if I understood engineering, which I didn't. But an important thing to know is that whatever we do in our lives, it'll come back to us to remind that there's something that I learned in that career. Even if I was a bus girl, a bus boy, whatever it is.
Whatever the word is now, yeah.
Yeah, because I remember after studying Christian Science, this one engineer telling me that, Fujiko, the more you understand the principles, less matter we need. Because in the 80s, we were really trying to get to thinner, lighter, smaller devices. and look what you have in your hand, the iPhone 5 or 4 or whatever. I was told that it has more computation ability than what was loaded on Apollo 13.
Yes.
So, you know, the principles, if we understand the principles, dependency on matter or physical law really should be a lesson. And I really feel just because we have these evidences, whether it's in our energy, I have another example like that I share in this lecture, that if we understand that energy is already here, instead of I have to create or have to live without, if we know that that technology is not somehow chasing it, but it's already there, we're only revealing to free us from that bulky thing called matter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's stuff.
That's stuff, yeah.
So, all right, just, it's that question that wants to get asked. You are in the profession of healing. You have the privilege of working with numerous people to get both your understanding expanded, but also reinforced. Have you watched that stuff go from one state to a different state? Just to reinforce it for the people that are wondering, okay, maybe she's only talked about mental changes of mind. Have you really watched physical stuff go from one state to another state when belief systems changed?
Oh, yes. I have a Buddhist gentleman in Japan whose son was diagnosed with pancreas cancer.
Oof.
And he, you know, the son is not studying this, but the father had already been healed of hepatitis C. When he was seriously reading this textbook, Science and Health.
Boy, in America, that's two death sentences you just listed.
Yes.
Those are dire diagnoses that have singular outcomes, typically, in the medical world.
That's right. Yes. So anyway, this father had already been healed, and the doctor had written this proof, gave us the data.
Oh, fabulous.
Sent it to the headquarter, and it's already in the record. You know, he doesn't have this. The virus disappeared.
Perfect.
And I had another one recently in the last month, exactly the same thing, hepatitis C. But the son, cancer was detected by the two most cutting-edge instrument in Japan, 4.5 centimeter diameter mass. That's just stuff.
That's stuff.
You know? So when he asked, can we pray? Because I know I have been prayed, I mean healed, and I wanted to see my son be free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the son was not very happy champ because he just came off the regular desk job to come help for his father making uniforms in Japan, which is really a toilsome work, you know, measuring kids who's jittering, fidgeting, and going back for, I don't know what it's called, the fitting, and then getting complaints, and he's just not a happy person. But he said, I want to pray. And one thing we started to really talk about was this very first few lines, that who is this, the father of the son? Is it you or this, you know, one in heaven? We need to step aside so he can see who and where he comes from. And then I said, every single time, we're going to do this singularity practice, that he is the image and likeness of God, as the first chapter in Genesis says, that he is this exact perfect child of the perfect God. And I don't know, he has a, diary that he sent a copy of. He records everything. Like, I talked to Fujiko this day, and then I think it was a week later, he went back to have it measured again. It was gone. And it's in the, you know, textbook. It's not anything new that I'm saying, that in the textbook, she talks about it. I think it's 264. I don't have the book right in front. I should. But, she says that if we understand the whole reality is spiritual, the formation of the spiritual first, And we see everything under the microscope of spirit. Matter disappears.
If we
and
understand,
I didn't really understand.
Yeah, if we understand that everything is spiritual first and we look at it under the microscope of spirituality, matter disappears. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just love that.
Well, I should get the correct...
we're close enough. Quote, you said you didn't understand it first, and then what realizations came, Fujiko?
Yeah, so that matter disappears under the microscope of spirit. And so, you know, the son said one day he did feel something leaving. I don't know whether in the form physically or, you know. And he admitted that the feeling that was there, even if he wasn't actively, you know, praying about it. So went back and then couldn't really find anything. And they said there's no more need for treatment either.
Wow.
For doctors to say, please come back every 3 months or 6 months. That's what they usually say.
Yeah.
But because they couldn't find anything, had never seen anything like this, I'm sure they're astounded. Astounded?
Yeah.
And they just said, well, you know, he's healed.
Yeah, go away, kid. You're confusing us.
Yes, that's right. Well, we didn't get the doctor's kind of writing at this point yet, but I have the, you know, son and father's writing especially. But one day he did pray deep into the night, and he said instead of pleading, his praying switched to gratitude. He was switched completely to gratitude and felt a release. And I just know that this is a self-proclaimed Buddhist praying this way and having these two major healings in the family.
Yes.
That quote is page 264. Spirit and its formations are the only realities of being. Matter disappears under the microscope of spirit. And, you know, I think it's important to know that when we think of miracles, that it's not somehow a kind of happenstance, is it called?
Mm-hmm.
Like happens to some and not to others.
Mm-hmm.
But to see how Mary Baker Eddy felt, and written in that section called Glossary, she said, miracle, that which is divinely natural, that must be learned humanly, a phenomenon of science, with capital S.
Please read that again. That was just a spectacular way for us to wind around to our close. Could you read that one more time?
Sure. Miracle, that which is divinely natural, but must be learned humanly, a phenomenon of science.
I don't want to let you go, but I know that we're going to have to let you dash out the door. According to how much time I'm allowed, you have a minute and a half. What do you want to tell people before you grab your bag and dash for the ferry?
I love you.
Well, that was
and
easy.
God loves you. Yeah. I love you, but not so much that I love you, but I just know that how much every single one of you is loved. And I just want whatever you have. Our cup is running over with this gratitude. And if you have one, please share that with others. We need to bless. We need to really help each other.
Phew, Fujiko, you are a walking, speaking, living blessing. There is no doubt in my mind. I am deeply affected every time I talk to you and every time I listen to your recordings. You can find her with some YouTube recordings up online. Well worth exploring. If you're in Oz, for goodness sake, seek her out. And the next time you're on the West Coast, I'll be looking to see if I can find out where I can find you. Thank you so very much for coordinating this together, because talk about being able to be in the moment. If y'all knew what her schedule was for the rest of the day, the fact that she could come present and be in the moment for this conversation is a huge treat. Thank you so very, very much.
Yes.
All right, dear. I'm going to let you go so that you can go dash and grab that ferry.
Yep. Thank
Thanks
you.
So much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I want to remind y'all that you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives coming out of our flagship station, KEST, in San Francisco, California, USA, where, as I speak, it's still Monday in our world. It's Tuesday in parts of Oz, but broadcasting KEST 1450 AM San Francisco, simulcast on www.ifidknownthen.com, or the shortcut there, because my name is Scout Bartlett. The shortcut into our website is notscott.com, if that sticks in your memory better. We'll get this show archived up if you want to bring your friends to hear it, or even if you want to download it and listen to it again, as I will. I'll just fast forward through my parts and listen to the good parts. You're welcome to do that as well. But I do want to let you know that I want to ask you two particular favors, which is just amazing, because I ask this every show, and she led right into that. The first favor I want to ask is for you to treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And secondly, just recognize that today's a perfect day for you to have a great day on purpose. I love you too.